Okay, so ready for takeoff.
Always.
This time we're gonna, deep dive into the wild world of flight, right? We've got like a whole presentation on aerodynamic principles, plus a chapter straight from an FAA handbook, Aerodynamics of Flight. Pretty heavy stuff.
Sounds like we've got our wings full.
Exactly. So our mission, should we choose to accept it, is to break down these invisible forces, right? Make sense of how planes, these big hunks of metal, actually stay up in the air. And maybe, just maybe, sprinkle in some real-world pilot wisdom along the way.
Sounds like a plan. By the end of this, our listeners will be looking at those contrails with a whole new level of appreciation.
Totally. It's like magic, but with, a whole lot of science behind it.
Speaking of science, it all boils down to four fundamental forces: thrust, drag, lift, and weight. These guys are the stars of the show.
A real quartet of power. I like it. And like from what I was reading, it's not even each force on its own. It's how they like work together, right? How they
Right.
can actually, and this blew my mind a little, transform during flight.
Yeah, that's the really cool part. They're constantly in this intricate dance, balancing and counterbalancing each other.
Like seriously, it said during a climb, some of the engine's thrust becomes lift. And when a plane descends, part of its weight acts like drag. Mind blown.
It's all about how those forces interact and influence each other. It's not as simple as, oh, thrust just makes the plane go forward. There's a whole lot more going on behind the scenes.
Okay, so like breaking it down then, let's start with thrust. For our listeners who aren't, aviation geeks, thrust is basically the muscle,
Right.
the engine's power pushing or pulling the plane forward.
It's the force that battles against that pesky drag to get the plane moving and keep it soaring through the air.
And this is where those pilots really earn their wings, right? Like, I mean, they're controlling the engine power, which directly affects that thrust. More power equals more thrust, which gets you a faster plane, simple as that.
Think of it like hitting the gas pedal in your car, except in this case, you're hurtling a massive chunk of metal through the air.
And get this, some of those super advanced aircraft can actually change the direction of their thrust, not just how much they're putting out.
Now that is some next level stuff. We're talking about planes with pivoting engines or
Yeah.
vectoring exhaust. They can change direction with a flick of their thrust, practically dancing through the air.
Okay, that's just cool. But let's talk about the force that truly like makes it all possible, right? I mean, how does something that can weigh more than like a herd of elephants even get off the ground?
It's all about lift, my friend. And it all comes down to the magic of those wings, or more specifically, their airfoil design.
Airfoil design. So we're talking aerodynamics here.
Big time. That unique shape with the curved upper surface and the flatter undersurface is what makes all the difference. As the wing slices through the air, it creates a difference in air pressure, lower pressure above the wing, higher pressure below. And guess what? Nature hates a vacuum, so that air underneath wants to push up, and bam, you've got lift.
So it's like the air is trying to like squeeze the wing upwards. That's wild.
Exactly. And here's where those skilled pilots come in. By adjusting the angle of attack, that's the angle between the wing and the oncoming air, they can control just how much lift those wings are generating.
Hold on, so they can actually control how much the air is squeezing the
In a
wings?
nutshell, yes, a steeper angle means more lift, but there's a limit. Push it too far and you get a stall, which is not what you want when you're soaring through the air.
Okay, so like stall in simple terms. What is it, like the engine cuts out or something?
Not quite.
Right.
It's a bit more nuanced than that. A stall happens when the airflow over the wing gets messed up, too steep an angle, and the smooth fluid attaches, you lose that precious lift, and the plane basically wants to fall out of the sky. Not ideal. But pilots are trained to handle this, and they usually have plenty of altitude to recover.
Okay, good to know. So back to this angle of attack thing.
Right. Within safe limits, this angle is the pilot's bread and butter. It's how they control a plane during takeoff, cruising, and those always tricky landings. It's pretty mind-blowing when you think about it. Just this small adjustment makes all the difference.
It really highlights how much physics is involved in every flight. But let's not forget about the party pooper of forces drag. That's the one that's always trying to hold us back, right?
Think of it like the friction you feel when you try to push something heavy. The air itself creates resistance as the aircraft slices through it. And there are two main culprits here: parasite drag and induced drag.
Culprits, I like that. Let's put those drag forces on trial. So parasite drag first.
Yeah.
It's all about the plane's shape, right? How easily it can slip through the air.
Exactly. The sleeker and more streamlined the design, the less drag it'll experience. Think of a sports car versus a big, boxy truck. The sports car is going to cut through the air much more easily, right?
Makes sense. And it's not just about the overall shape either, right? Our source material broke it down even further.
Right. You've got form drag, which is about the shape, like you said.
Yeah.
Imagine holding a flat plate versus a teardrop shape in a fast stream of water. Which one do you think is going to meet less resistance?
Definitely the teardrop.
That's form drag in action. Then there's interference drag, which happens when airstreams collide. Picture the air flowing smoothly around the fuselage, then bam, it slams into the air flowing over the wings, creating a turbulent mess.
Sounds messy, so how do you fix that?
Designers use fairings. They're those smooth, curved surfaces that blend different parts of the aircraft together. They're like those little dividers you get in the box of chocolates, but for airflow.
Love the analogy. Okay, and then there's, what was it called? Skin friction drag. That's just the air rubbing against the plane, right?
Exactly. It's why a super smooth, polished finish on an aircraft is always going to be faster than a rough one. Think about how much easier it is to swim in a smooth wetsuit compared to one that's got a bunch of Velcro and seams catching on the water.
So it's all about minimizing any kind of resistance. Okay, so that was a whirlwind tour of parasite drag. But what about induced drag? This one's a bit sneakier, right?
Yeah, it's a bit more complex. You see, induced drag is actually a byproduct of lift. You can't have one without the other. It's like a deal with the devil, you get to fly, but it comes with a price.
Okay, so like the wing's busy creating lift, but it's also causing drag at the same time.
In a way, yes. As the wing generates lift, it also creates a downward flow of air behind it called downwash.
Mm.
Imagine the wake behind a boat, it's kind of like that.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
Now this downwash, along with some swirling mini tornadoes that form at the wingtips called wingtip vortices, actually create drag. It's a trade-off. You need lift to fly, but generating lift also creates this unavoidable drag.
Fascinating. So it's like the wing is giving with one hand and taking away with the other.
Pretty much. And the amount of induced drag changes depending on your speed and angle of attack. At slower speeds and higher angles of attack, like during takeoff and landing, induced drag increases. That's why understanding this type of drag is so important for pilots, especially during those critical phases of flight.
So it's a constant balancing act. Now for the force that's always trying to bring us crashing back down to reality weight, basically it's just gravity doing its thing, right?
Exactly. It's the force of gravity acting on the aircraft and everything inside it, passengers, fuel, luggage, the whole shebang. And it's not just about the total weight, but how it's distributed.
Oh, right. We can't forget about the center of gravity, that magical point where all the weight is perfectly balanced. That's like super important for stability, right?
Absolutely. It's like trying to balance a pencil on your finger. Get it just right, and it stands tall, but even a tiny shift and it topples over. Same with an aircraft. The center of gravity needs to be within a very specific range for the aircraft to be stable and controllable.
So if it's too far forward?
The aircraft becomes nose heavy, which can make it difficult to control, especially at low speeds.
And too far back?
You guessed it, tail heavy, making the aircraft prone to pitching up, which can lead to a stall.
Not good. So where the center of gravity sits makes a huge difference.
A huge difference. And guess what? It's not a fixed point either. It can shift during flight as fuel burns off or passengers move around. That's why pilots are constantly calculating and adjusting for weight and balance throughout a flight.
Wow, they make it look so easy, but there's a lot going on behind the scenes.
There's a reason those guys and gals get all the glory. They are literally juggling forces up there.
It's like a constant juggling act, keeping all those forces in check. And speaking of juggling, it's not just traditional planes that have mastered this whole flight thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our source material mentioned something about powered parachutes, which I have to admit, I don't know much about.
They're like the go-karts of the aviation world. Simple, fun, and a great way to experience the freedom of flight. And you might be surprised to learn that they actually generate lift in a similar way to airplanes through the shape of their, well, wings.
Wait, so those big billowy canopies actually act like wings?
You bet. They've got that same basic airfoil design, curved upper surface, flatter under surface, creating that pressure difference we talked about earlier. It's all about tricking the air into pushing you upwards.
Sneaky, but how do those canopies even stay inflated? Don't they need like a constant air supply or something?
They do. And that's where the powered part comes in. See, powered parachutes have these engines that not only propel them forward, but also pump air into the canopy to keep it nice and inflated.
Ah, okay, so it's like a giant fan keeping that wing-like shape going.
Exactly. It's incredibly simple, yet remarkably effective, allowing for slow and stable flight, perfect for leisurely flights. But if you want to talk about vertical takeoff, helicopters are where it's at.
Now those are impressive machines. They seem to defy gravity in a whole different way.
They do. While airplanes rely on fixed wings and forward motion to generate lift, helicopters use those massive rotating blades, the rotors, to create that upward force.
So those blades are basically like spinning wings slicing through the air and pushing it down.
Precisely. Each rotor blade is essentially a mini wing, generating lift as it spins. And by tilting the entire rotor disc, the pilot can control the direction of thrust, making helicopters incredibly maneuverable.
That's how they hover, fly sideways, even backwards, right? I mean, it's wild.
It's like they're dancing on air. It's a testament to the ingenuity of aerospace engineers and the skill of those helicopter pilots. But since we're on the topic of maneuvers, let's break down what happens when a fixed-wing aircraft makes a turn. Because it's not just about turning the steering wheel, right?
No kidding. I've always wondered about that. Like, what keeps them from just tipping over?
It all comes down to that delicate balance of forces we've been talking about. When an aircraft banks into a turn, the lift vector, that upward force we've been discussing, no longer acts straight up. It actually tilts inward towards the center of the turn.
So it's like the lift is pulling the plane into the turn.
Exactly. Our source material called this the centripetal force, the same force that keeps a ball swinging in a circle on a string. Without it, that plane would just keep going straight, or worse, start to slip sideways.
Okay, so it's like an invisible force pulling it in.
Precisely. But there's a catch. As the plane banks, the vertical component of lift, the part actually fighting gravity, decreases. To maintain altitude, the pilot needs to increase the angle of attack.
Which, if I remember correctly, also increases lift, but it also increases that pesky drag, right?
You got it. So to compensate for that increased drag and maintain speed during the turn, the pilot needs to add power as well. It's a three-way balancing act, adjusting the bank angle, the angle of attack, and the engine power all at once.
It's like those spinning plates they used to have on talent shows, so much coordination.
Exactly. And we can't forget about load factor either. Remember how that increases during a turn, which in turn increases the stall speed?
Right. So the tighter the turn, the faster you need to be going to avoid a stall.
It's one of those crucial things pilots always keep in mind, especially when maneuvering at low speeds. Now, shifting gears a bit, I found this fascinating section in the source material about the forces at play during climbs and descents.
Okay, because I'll admit, I just kind of assumed it was like pointing the nose up or down, adding power, and off you go.
If only it were that simple. Turns out, there's a fascinating shift in those four fundamental forces during both maneuvers. For instance, in a climb, some of the aircraft's weight actually starts working against it, like drag, pulling it backwards.
Really? So it's like climbing a hill. You need more effort to overcome that downward pull.
Precisely. And to compensate for this extra drag, the pilot needs to add power. The steeper the climb, the more power is required. And get this, during a descent, almost the opposite happens.
Let me guess, some of that weight starts acting like thrust, helping it go down faster.
Exactly. To maintain a safe and controlled descent, the pilot actually reduces power.
So you reduce power to go down. That seems a little counterintuitive.
It does, doesn't it? It really highlights how important it is to understand the subtle interplay of these forces. Now, let's talk about one of the most critical aspects of flight safety that's directly related to these forces, stalls.
Okay, because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about stalls. People hear stall and they immediately picture an engine failure, but that's not quite it, is it?
Not at all. A stall happens when the wing exceeds what we call its critical angle of attack. Basically, that smooth, streamlined airflow over the wing that creates all that lovely lift. Well, it gets disrupted, becomes turbulent, and the wing suddenly loses its lift-generating mojo.
So it's more about the airflow than the engine itself?
Exactly. And as we talked about before, stall speed increases with load factor. So the heavier the aircraft is, or the tighter the turn, the faster you need to be going to avoid stalling.
And those dramatic nose-down movements I've seen in videos, that's the plane trying to recover from a stall, right?
Exactly. Most aircraft are designed to naturally pitch nose-down during a stall. It's their way of decreasing the angle of attack and getting that smooth airflow back over the wings. Of course, it's up to the pilot to recognize the stall early and work with the aircraft to recover safely.
It's a team effort, plane and pilot working together. Now, the source material also mentioned that wing design plays a big role in how a stall happens, right?
Big time. A well-designed wing can make all the difference. Most training aircraft, for example, are designed to stall at the wing root, the part of the wing closest to the fuselage, first.
Why is that?
It's a safety feature, believe it or not. By stalling at the root first, it helps maintain controllability of the ailerons, which are those control surfaces on the outer edges of the wings.
So even during a stall, the pilot still has some control. That's reassuring.
Exactly. Now, here's another interesting tidbit from the source now. Source material stalls aren't just about flying too slow. You can actually stall an aircraft at high speeds, too.
Wait, really? How does that happen?
Imagine an aircraft diving at high speed. If the pilot pulls back abruptly on the elevator control, causing a sudden increase in the angle of attack, you can actually stall the wings, even though the airspeed is high.
So it's all about that angle of attack, not just the speed.
It's about exceeding that critical angle of attack, regardless of how fast you're going. And thankfully, many modern aircraft have a special instrument called an angle of attack indicator. It's like a heads-up display, showing the pilot exactly where they are in relation to that critical stall angle.
Like an early warning system for stalls. That's got to be reassuring for pilots.
Absolutely. It's all about increasing situational awareness, especially during critical maneuvers or in turbulent conditions. But speaking of stability, let's dive into how aircraft are designed to be inherently stable in the first place.
Because I imagine flying would be a lot more challenging if pilots were constantly fighting to keep those planes level, right?
You got that right. That's where aircraft stability comes in. It's about designing an aircraft that wants to naturally return to a stable flight path after a gust of wind or a control input.
So it's like building stability into the aircraft's DNA.
Exactly. And it all comes down to those three axes of rotation we talked about earlier: pitch, roll, and yaw. Let's start with longitudinal stability, which is all about the plane's pitch, that nose up or nose down attitude.
So we're back to the center of gravity, the shape of the wings, and that mini wing at the back, the horizontal stabilizer, right?
You got it. All those things work together to keep the plane stable in the pitch axis.
And if I remember correctly, the position of that horizontal stabilizer is super important.
Absolutely. If it's too far forward or too far back, it can make the aircraft unstable. It's a delicate balancing act, getting it just right.
It's like those perfectly balanced rocks you see in nature. Amazing. But what about stability in the roll axis? That's the plane's tendency to stay level from side to side, right?
Right. We call that lateral stability. And the magic ingredient here is something called the hedral, that slight upward angle of the wings you see on most aircraft.
Ah, so it's like the wings are forming a shallow V-shape when viewed from the front.
Exactly. And you know what? That simple design feature makes a world of difference when it comes to stability.
How so?
Well, imagine the plane starts to roll to one side. That upward angle of the wing actually causes the lower wing, the one that's dipping down, to have a higher angle of attack, which generates more lift. More lift on that side pushes it back up, naturally leveling the aircraft. It's a beautiful thing.
So the wings are basically self-correcting, always trying to get back to that stable, level flight?
You got it. And then there's directional stability, keeping the nose pointed in the right direction, preventing it from yawing or fishtailing.
Okay, and that's where the vertical fin at the back, the one that looks like a shark fin, comes into play, right?
Exactly. That vertical fin is crucial for directional stability. It acts like a weather vane or the rudder on a ship, providing a stabilizing force that keeps the nose pointed where it needs to go.
So simple, yet so effective. It's amazing how every little detail on an aircraft serves a purpose.
It really is. Yeah. But hold on. There are a few curveballs when it comes to stability. Things like spiral instability and Dutch roll. Ever heard of those?
They don't sound like things you want to experience mid-flight.
They're not ideal. Spiral instability happens when an aircraft has too much of a good thing, too much directional stability compared to its lateral stability. Basically, the plane wants to turn more than it wants to roll. It can lead to an overbanking tendency, which in extreme cases can turn into a scary downward spiral.
So in this case, too much stability is actually a bad thing.
It's all about balance. Now, Dutch roll is a bit different. Imagine a plane that's kind of wobbling and swaying through the air, not the smoothest ride. It's a type of instability that involves both rolling and yawing motions, usually caused by some design quirks.
I can imagine that wouldn't be much fun for passengers. So it's a reminder that stability is a complex beast, right?
You said it. You need enough to keep the plane flying straight and level, but not so much that it becomes difficult to maneuver. It's all about finding that sweet spot. Which brings us to our next topic, wings.
The things that make it all possible. And it's not just about size, right? Our source material mentioned a bunch of different wing shapes, or planforms, as they called them.
Exactly. You've got rectangular wings, tapered wings, elliptical wings, even wings that are twisted. And each one has its pros and cons. Take the elliptical wing, for example. It's super efficient in terms of reducing that induced drag we talked about earlier, but it's a nightmare to build, much more complex and expensive than other designs.
So there are trade-offs with every design.
Always. And like you mentioned, some wings are actually designed with a twist, where the angle of attack changes along the span of the wing. That's often done to improve stall characteristics, making the stall more gradual and predictable.
It's like giving the wing a custom-tailored fit for optimal performance.
It's like giving the wing its own custom suit, tailored for perfect flight. Speaking of tailoring, let's talk about how engineers design those wings to handle the crazy forces of high-speed flight.
Yeah.
Yeah, when things get really interesting.
Because nothing says we've conquered the skies like breaking the sound barrier, right? And at those speeds, we're talking about a whole new ballgame, shockwaves, sonic booms, the whole shebang.
It's where things get really wild. As an aircraft approaches the speed of sound, that's Mach 1, for those playing along the air, can't get out of the way fast enough. So what happens? It gets compressed, squeezed together, and boom. You get these shockwaves forming around the aircraft.
It's like the air is putting up a fight, saying, slow down, buddy, you're not supposed to go this fast.
That's something like that. These shockwaves create a ton of drag, making it even harder to accelerate. It's like hitting a wall of resistance, only it's made of invisible compressed air.
That's wild. So these shockwaves, they're not just making it harder to go fast, but they're also responsible for that sonic boom we hear, right?
Exactly. That thunderous clap is actually the sound of those shockwaves slamming into the air around them. It's like the universe's way of saying, hey, you're going too fast.
I like to think of it as the plane's own personal sound effect. But those shockwaves, they can cause some serious issues for pilots and aircraft designers, right? I mean, besides just the noise.
Oh, yeah. They can create a whole host of headaches. For instance, there's something called Mach tuck, where as the aircraft approaches the speed of sound, the center of pressure on the wing, remember that balancing point for lift we talked about?
Yep.
Well, it starts to shift rearward toward the tail. And that, my friend, creates a nose-down pitching moment, which, if not corrected, can send the aircraft into a steep dive.
So it's like the plane is trying to tuck its nose and dive bomb towards the ground. That doesn't sound good.
Not good at all. Thankfully, engineers have figured out ways to counteract these things, like special wing designs and something called a Mach trim system, which automatically adjusts the aircraft's controls to compensate for those pesky shockwaves. But it just goes to show how wild things get when you start messing around with the sound barrier.
So, supersonic flight, not for the faint of heart, or wing, it seems. But let's bring it back down to Earth for a moment and talk about something that's crucial for all aircraft, regardless of speed, weight, and balance.
Right. It doesn't matter how powerful your engines are or how aerodynamic your wings are. If the weight and balance are off, you're asking for trouble.
It's like that saying, you can't cheat physics.
Exactly. And when it comes to aviation, ignoring those fundamental laws can have serious consequences.
So weight and balance calculations, it's not just something pilots do to pass the time before takeoff.
Not at all. They're the difference between a smooth flight and a potential disaster.
Yeah.
Get those numbers wrong, and you risk everything from reduced performance and handling difficulties to, in extreme cases, a catastrophic accident.
Okay, now I'm getting nervous just thinking about it. So let's break it down for our listeners. What exactly goes into these calculations?
Well, it starts with the weight, obviously. Mm-hmm. Every single pound on that aircraft, passengers, luggage, fuel, even the catering, has to be accounted for and added up. And it's not just about staying below that maximum takeoff weight either. It's about how that weight is distributed.
Right. We've got to keep that center of gravity happy, remember?
Exactly. Remember that imaginary balancing point we talked about earlier? If the weight is too far forward, your nose heavy. Too far back, and your tail heavy.
I mean, neither one is good.
Let's just say it can make for a very exciting and, not in a good way, takeoff or landing. It can even affect how the aircraft handles in the air, making it sluggish or even uncontrollable.
So pilots and ground crews, they take this stuff seriously for a reason.
They do. They are the unsung heroes, meticulously calculating, measuring, and distributing that weight to make sure that center of gravity stays right where it needs to be.
It's like a giant puzzle, but instead of pieces, they're dealing with people's luggage and jet fuel.
And lives. Let's not forget what's at stake when those calculations are off.
That's a sobering thought. But on that note, maybe it's time to wrap up this deep dive.
Sounds good to me. We've covered a lot of ground, or should I say air, today.
We have. We've explored the invisible forces that make flight possible, the delicate dance of lift and drag, the challenges of supersonic speeds, and the crucial importance of weight and balance.
And hopefully our listeners now have a whole new appreciation for the wonders of aviation.
Right. So next time you see a plane soaring overhead, take a moment to appreciate the incredible forces at play, the ingenuity of the engineers who designed it, and the skill of the pilots who make it all look so effortless. Until next time, keep looking up.